Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Breaking news, Alex Bregman has signed a deal with the Boston Red Sox.
Decisions will be made in a few weeks, and there's going to be people upset.
Third base, he's not going to play third base.
I'm a DH, and I feel like you guys need to change the subject because that is over, and I'm the DH.
And Bregman, at the last minute, holds up at first base. And he hurt himself, oh no. A nightmare for the Red Sox.
Few shot, chopper on the first base line. And Casas goes down in a heap. Tristan is in a ton of pain.
No, I mean, he's our DH.
No.
They can't expect me to play every single position out there.
No.
They talked to me and basically, told me to put away my glove, that I wasn't going to play any other position but DH.
Devers swings and rockets one on a line to the center field, base hit, and Rafael Devers delivers.
He played ball, and I would like to think that he knows that, changing positions like that isn't easy.
Rafi drills one high and deep into right field. He owns Yankee Stadium. Adios, Carita.
Good to see him taking ground balls, and we know that when the time is right, if we need him, he'll be there.
High and deep into right field, back to track. Gone! A grand slam for Devers.
Devers swings and launches. Center field. It is gone!
Devers drives one high and deep into center field. It is gone!
Rafael Devers did not want to be in Boston anymore, and the Red Sox saw this as an opportunity to get rid of more than $250 million.
Adios, Carito!
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Just when you thought it was safe to buy back in, just when you thought it was all right to put back on your new City Connect and be a super fan all over again, just after the Red Sox won their fourth straight, completing a sweep against the New York Yankees, re-entering the rivalry, the AL East race, and the playoff chase at large, they pull you back in. Or actually, they give you the Heisman and keep you at arm's length. That's right. In the middle of all this drama, in the middle of all the excitement, the fever pitch on Father's Day, no less. Awkward time to get a Rafael Devers jersey as a Father's Day present, no less, Mego. The Red Sox, out of the blue, upend your Sunday night supper on Father's Day, trading three-time All-Star, best hitter, highest paid player, most recognizable Red Sox, and the last bastion of the 2018 World Series champion Red Sox, Rafael Devers, as you heard Will Fleming right there at the tail end of Brian Ferzocco's fantastic opening montage, celebrating the entry of Bregman and the farewell of Devers. Rafael Devers traded from the Red Sox to the San Francisco Giants in, dare I say, Mego, a Garapolian style, out of the blue, unexpected, for a yield that none seem too pleased about. And boy, oh boy, don't we have a big Monday bucket of stuff to talk about. Hello, everybody. It's Mego and Fitzy and Dan Ballgame filling in for Andy and Ted and Fitzy. I'll be playing the part. Who's playing Fitzy today, Dan Ball? Am I playing Fitzy or am I Andy Harder? How's that work out?
I feel like it's something you kind of got to sort out along the way. I'm happy to take the Fitzy mantle. I'd be honored.
I don't know about that, actually. It's... I've heard it can be kind of hard. A lot of expectations, big chin, a lot of hair, goofy behavior. No one really likes your tweets. I don't know if I do that. You're doing a great job these days. So it's Fitzy, it's Mego, it's Dan Ball, and of course, behind the glass, Stanley Stiz Grimy Bruno here with you from 2 to 6 on WEEI Afternoons. You can give us a call or shoot us a text at any time, 617-779-7937. The socials on the IG and the tweet machine at WEEI Afternoons. She's at Megan_Ottolini, and I'm at Fitzy GFY. On today's show, full-blown, nonstop Rafael Devers mania. Why it happened? Did it have to happen now? Who the hell did they get back? Is it even close to commensurate value for Rafael Devers? Spoiler alert, nope. Is this the new Mookie Betts trade for a brand new generation as well? Chris Cotillo from Mass Live, who's done an excellent job covering the Rafael Devers dysfunction and drama at 2:30. We're hoping to get our pal Lou Merlone on the show later on today as well. You never want to miss a three-point stance. That's coming up at 3 o'clock. And, of course, it's a Monday, so we got a Fitzy 5 for you coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Today, the five most shocking trades in Boston sports history over the last 100 years. I couldn't go back and include Babe Ruth. I think that was just a little too far. But let's find out later if the Devers trade makes the most shocking trades. First, on the table, set it up. Your initial reaction when your phone blew up last night around 6:30 or so. Rafael Devers, gone! No longer a Red Sox.
What a freaking clown show. Oh, my God. So I got the news. My brother-in-law texted me and said, did Devers really just get traded? And I'm like, what? Because we're all sitting on the couch just watching random stuff. And sure enough, like everybody else, you're checking three different sources to make sure that you're not getting goofed on by somebody on Twitter.
Right.
What a joke this is. And this is where I want to go first, because I know everybody, for the most part, has been reading stuff, listening to other opinions and more information as it comes out about this trade all day long. We're here at 2 o'clock. I'm trying to absorb it as much as everybody else and what we're hearing from really smart reporters. The return is inexcusable to me because of how long you saw this coming. Like, to all of us, it was such a shock, such a shock. But now when you go back, you look at Julian McWilliams has a report from CBS Sports. He was previously with the Globe, and you find out that that Rafael Devers was asking for a trade back in spring training after things had gone sideways when Alex Bregman was signed to his position on defense.
And that can't come as a surprise because he stormed out of camp.
And then even beyond that, Fitzy, you look back to 5.5 weeks ago when things really seemed to hit a tipping point. You have the owner, John Henry, who never shows his face anywhere. He goes out to Kansas City to meet one-on-one to have a, quote, candid conversation with Rafael Devers. And that's five and a half weeks ago. And this is the best that you could come up with? This is the best that you could come up with. I know we're going to dive into the return, but to me, I think mostly agrees that Devers, the way that he has acted, he's never been a leader in that clubhouse. Great bat, but you could even argue maybe not the best Red Sox player. Like, you can in good faith make that argument. But at the same time, you had months to try to figure out how to move this guy. And the only thing that you can really do backflips over is like, oh, they got somebody to eat his contract. 8 years of the future contract.
$255 million.
You have financial flexibility, and we're supposed to be excited for that?
What, the financial flexibility doesn't move your baseball needle, Mego?
We're supposed to be excited for financial flexibility? Like, what is this? Am I meeting with a financial advisor at Bank of America? Get out of here.
Yeah, you're talking to your wealth management advisor. Yeah, exactly.
That's my takeaway. What a freaking joke.
So you think it's a joke in so much as the Red Sox return. You're trading away one of the best DHs in baseball, one of the best home run hitters, one of the best power hitters, tops in RBIs, one of the most dynamic left-handed bats, and you're looking for something reasonably equal, commensurate in value in return. If this wasn't just some random outfielder and three pitchers you'd never heard of before, which almost makes Connor Wong, Jeter Downs, and Alex Verdugo seem like a king's ransom at this point. If you thought the return was better, would you have been more okay? Would you have stomached this trade a little easier? Would it have been more palatable for you?
Certainly. I think the return is the whole thing. I'm not weeping for the loss of Devers. I have kind of been over Devers for a while. I don't like the way that he comports himself, his inflexibility. Obviously now, as more information comes out, we know that he was so at odds with the front office and what they were asking him to do. So that's the point that it had gotten to. But it's like, I don't think he's irreplaceable. I don't think that he's going to be this once-in-a-generation player that you look back on and you go like, oh my God, now that guy is going to be mashing for 8 years somewhere else. But at the same time, you don't trade away a piece like that and just settle. And they just settled. And I think that's so frustrating. And on top of all of it, what they settled for is some pretty mediocre pitching and prospects. Like a flyer on a guy also named Bayo that we basically don't know anything about. And they're once again telling fans, just hold on tight. We're going to operate like a mid-tier, like a mid-market team. But don't worry, the kids are up here now, so things are going to get better. Like, why are you going to just have a little patience? It's been 7 years since the 2018 World Series. You've totally dismantled the core of that team for pennies on the dollar. I don't know how anyone has the patience to root for this team anymore.
Yeah, that was one of the big takeaways last night at large. I didn't get a chance to consume much mainstream media, given all the familial activities that were taking place. But everything that I saw online was, that's it. Fire Breslow, fire Cora, sell the team. I'm out. This was it. This is the last move to me. And I think it's mostly just because of the value. My two initial takeaways, Mego, and I see the phones are already lighting up with a variety pack of calls, intel on the prospects, a conspiracy theory on why the Red Sox and the Fenway Sports Group could have made the call now, and so much more. Love that at 617-779-7937. So my big thing, Mego, is I understand wanting to get out from under a contract you were reluctant to hand out in the first place, but sometimes you don't get tradesy backs. Like, you don't just get to be like, we never should have given you that. That was an impetuous move on our behalf. It was reactionary to a fan revolt led at one of our little Red Sox parties over the winter because everybody was so mad that Bogarts was gone and we got donuts on the dollar back for Mookie Betts. That trade is the dumbest trade in the history of maybe all Boston sports, let alone the Red Sox. Because they got nothing back for a guy who's truly one of the best players in baseball, top five over the last 10 years, easily would have gone down as one of the 10 best members of the Red Sox in his career as well. I understand wanting to get out from underneath it if you think that he's a sour grape, if he's a bad apple, a bad egg, if he's poisoning the locker room to a certain degree, if he's setting a bad example, a bad precedent, and other people are following his lead or lack thereof. He's always been a reluctant leader at best. Yes, he's a dynamic bat. His bad attitude, his inflexibility, and the way that he has handled himself, like you said, the way that he comports himself, I'm not going to miss that in the very least. However, that you wanted to, that you needed to, that you felt like you couldn't handle the turbulence from his behavior and what was going on behind the scenes long enough to ride the season out when you could tell that you clearly need his bat in the middle of the lineup and that his presence is good, like that void that's going to be created, regardless of how good the kids may do, regardless of whatever Yoshida or whoever else comes back up and fills in the DH sometime soon does. Like, just why now? That's, I think, of all my questions and curiosities, why right now, the middle of June during a hot streak, when it looks like you finally turned the ship around and you are chartering a course for relevance and a possible playoff push as you head towards the halfway point of the season? Why now? Because I don't see, unless this is complete addition by subtraction, I don't see how the Red Sox are a better team. Forget the prospects, please. I don't see how the Red Sox are a better team today than they were yesterday.
I'm seeing texts roll in about how you should be excited about the financial flexibility. This opens up room for them to spend. I'm done. I don't know how you trust that they're going to spend. And the way that they used this Rafael Devers contract, which you alluded to there, Fitzy, mm-hmm. was that after they let Xander Bogaerts walk, which a lot of fans were pissed about in the moment then, was they turned around that December and signed Rafi. And they held up this biggest contract ever, and it's 10 years, and aren't you so excited? We're maintaining a piece from the core of that 2018 World Series. And they turn around and do this, and everybody can say Rafi was a brat, and he was selfish, and he was inflexible, and I totally agree with you. But he didn't get to that point just because he's a jerk. He didn't just wake up one day after getting paid and say, I'm sick of this place. You need to have accountability on both sides. And when they just ship him out and they yank him from the team plane, put him in an Uber, and get him back to send him back out to San Francisco, who you're going to see on Friday, it just looks like a clown show. Like, I don't know how people, God bless you if you're so optimistic and sunny side of the street that you've been through the last 7 years and you watch all of this go down and you go, well, it's okay, guys. Like, let's see what they do. Let's pump the brakes. I feel like we're in good hands. I don't know. At the same time, I kind of feel like you're an ostrich with your head in the sand. Like, I can't understand that approach. God bless you if that's how you feel. But if this was a team that I had season tickets to, that I cared deeply about, that I was buying jerseys for my kids for, I'd be like, F off with this financial flexibility. Get out of here.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a take for sure. I think there is a chance the addition by subtraction principle could kick in as well. And I'm not saying that any lineup is better when you remove a boomstick like Rafael Devers. But you do. They have been playing better baseball of late while Alex Bregman has been out. So when Bregman returns, Maybe you won't feel it as badly. We'll see exactly how, you know, what kind of, you know, what he meant to the soup, what he meant to the clubhouse. I'm dying to hear from any member of the Red Sox. I'll be very curious if Breslow, Cora, and by the way, this week we'll be speaking with Alex Cora. Our usual Wednesday 2:30 p.m. interview will be tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Me, Ted Johnson, Dan Ball. We will have Alex Cora live from the West Coast tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. on WEEI Afternoons. I'm dying to hear from all of them. When did you know about it? Did you sign off on it? Are you okay with it? How do you feel about the prospects? Did Bailey or basically tell you who you were supposed to go and get from San Francisco since he had affiliation with the organization previously? Like, this one move has opened up just a bucket of questions, and I don't even know how in the world we're going to be able to get them all answered. Dan Ball, real quick, before we jump to the phones and start talking to the Fenway faithful and the good people at WEEI, what was your initial take as you were enjoying your Father's Day with your pops down in Connecticut?
Well, it certainly ruined dinner. I can tell you that. It was.
We ate an hour and a half late, too. There was no warm supper service.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, the appetite kind of just flew away. It was the funniest thing when you see something like that. It was the most aggressive example, Fitzy, to me, that we've seen of this leadership group having zero plan. And we've talked about it more within the context of calling up the kids when you had injuries instead of calling them up when you felt like they were ready. This, to me, just felt like we need to get rid of them now. And we're not going to do our due diligence. We're not going to shop them according to Buster only. We just need to make this knee-jerk reaction for a reason that I don't think we know yet. So
yeah, we're going to call up John Lynch in the middle of the night and ask for a second round pick.
Yeah, it didn't feel very well. Well planned. It didn't feel like there was the due diligence done beforehand. And now in already say uneasy tenure for a superstar in Boston has ended on about the worst note possible.
Yeah, just I apologize. I didn't mean to step on your toes there, Dan. But what is up with Boston teams making impetuous trades with superstars and sending them to San Francisco basically in the middle of the night? I don't get it. Like the Garoppolo deal was Jimmy G out of the blue on a Monday night to San Francisco. This is Rafael Devers to San Francisco, who you're playing on Friday. God, if he starts at first base or third, he obviously won't start at third base. They have a great third baseman. But if he, so help me God, if he plays first base out there, would it surprise you, Mego, if he did? Would it surprise you in the least if he's like, oh, no, I'm absolute team first?
He's already giving quotes that he will, so I don't think it should surprise anybody.
What a dink. You know, honestly, I will sit on this. I'm not going to fence it. I'm not going to go, oh, I can see why they'd want to move on from him. Oh, he had a point. Like our pal Andrew Callahan had his great piece in the Boston Herald. He's beside himself. He thinks the Red Sox have absolutely, regardless of the return they got, they mishandled one of their superstars, the last of the superstars they had of the mid-2010s and beyond. And I get it. I appreciate the passion. I just think at this point now, his insolence and his bad attitude and his inability to be flexible and go team first, especially considering he was being paid $250 million to just swing a baseball bat, which most of us would do for free. I know. No one wants to hear the fan-centric take on it, but I think that's one of the main reasons why they wanted to get him out. 617-779-7937 is your telephone number. The lines are jammed like the Mass Pike's going to be this weekend when they replace the bridge in Newton. Let's go line one, Matt in Linfield. Matt, how are you?
What's up, Fitzy? What's up, Mega? How we doing?
How you doing,
okay,
buddy?
How are you doing, Matt?
I'm hanging in there. I'm coming to you as a member of Red Sox Nation, but a diehard international soccer fan, and I have a conspiracy theory about this trade. Liverpool Football Club just spent $180 million on some of the best players in the world and are making an aggressive push to chase the Premier League title again. And I feel like this is an easy way for the Red Sox ownership group, who has not shown that they can manage superstars over the years, to get out from under that contract so they can spend in Europe.
So wait, so you think they were willing to basically accept back, you know, Pitch McGee, Flotsam Jetsam, and some random dude from San Francisco, so that this was not even a Red Sox ownership. This was a Fenway Sports Group move?
Well, it feels like when you watch both sides of the pond, right, they were really invested in trying to win the Premier League every year, and it doesn't feel like this ownership group is invested in trying to win even the American League East, let alone the World Series. It feels like they don't know how to treat superstars, and they're running everybody out of town.
Ooh, I like it. Mego, how do you like that? Matt, thanks for the call, man. Have a great day. I love it. I love the idea of a zesty international spin on things. John Henry's like, well, I'll just go spend my $250 million elsewhere. Actually, if they're going to – this is good. I love this. If it's like 180 million pounds, okay, which is what I feel like I weigh after having too much dinner late last night. If it's 180 million pounds, that's basically the Rafael Devers deal. So they just decide, okay, he's a pain in the ass. We'll take something back in return. And then John Henry, literally, this would incense, I love it, this would incense Red Sox fans even more. Like, he literally borrowed from, what is it, you rob Peter to pay Paul? Or in this case, he robbed Devers to pay Liverpool?
Yeah, I think that it's very fair to look at this situation. And if you're a fan of any of the teams in Fenway Sports Group, but think about the team for which that group is named, and just feel that they are part of a portfolio. That's what it is now. I know that's an accusation that it's been around for years. And at times I've thought, well, it's kind of unfair. This is the ownership group that brought you your World Series after such a long drought. But I think that goodwill is mostly gone at this point. If you look at the way that they've operated, I think it's fair to look at how they spend on other teams, how they spend on development projects like Fenway Corners, and say, are these really all in separate bank accounts, if you want to look at it that way? I think it's just a part of the portfolio, and that's how they're running it.
Interesting you say that. Like Fenway Corners, just the same way. Now, Mego, people got on the Patriots for a long time because it was, oh, we're too interested in building the world's largest flat-screen TV so we can get the World Cup.
I think that was fair, too. The lighthouse, all of that.
Yeah,
I think it's fair.
The lighthouse and the TV. It's like, hey, how about focusing on the product on the field as opposed to all the cosmetic improvements that you guys want to make, so as you can get the World Cup and fancy up the stadium. That's actually, if we're being honest, a little bit behind the times now. And now here they are like, well, we got a great sports portfolio. The fact that you used in the first break on the show following the trade of the biggest superstar in the Red Sox, the fact that the word portfolio was used is probably just absolutely, you know, souring every hot dog being consumed in Sox Nation. One more quick call before we go. Andrew is in California on line two. Andrew, how are you?
Hey, thank you for letting me join your show here. I know the Harrison family, and I follow Kyle very closely. I think when I hear people describe him as a joker, you know, he's part of a bag of balls, this kid has quite a pedigree. And if you look back, he played for the USA national team as a 20-year-old in Richmond, Virginia. I think he struck out more guys than anybody had in 80 years. And then in his first 10 starts with the Giants, he struck out more guys than anybody in the Giants since Juan Marichal.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much. Sorry,
I don't think anybody. First of all, that phone was tough.
Yeah, the phone was bad. And also, at this point, Andrew, well, I think I know where you're going with this one, Mego.
Nobody called him a bag of balls. He just got demoted to the bullpen. Like that's right. What we're saying. You need help with the pitching overall. Like, yeah, it's great that you got two more arms and maybe even another in a prospect. But if you tell me that the return that you're getting back now is going to make your team better than having Rafael Devers in your lineup, I just think you're kidding yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I did bandy about the phrase flotsam and jetsam. And so people have said bag of balls or nothing in return. Perhaps there'll be something. I don't know. But right now, the contributions that'll be made via the four players that were that were acquired in the Rafael Devers trade, in no way, shape, or form will they possibly amount to the contributions that he was making in the lineup during that hot streak as well. Lines are still jammed up at 617-779-7937. We will try to get to all your calls within the hour for sure, so hang on. Coming up, Chris Cotillo, who's done an awesome job for Mass Live covering the Rafael Devers drama and dysfunction, joins me, Mego, and Ballgame here on Afternoons. But first, coming up, we got to catch you up on everything else going on in the wild world of sports, trending right now with Dan Ball.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Well, we've already heard about some of the prospects the Red Sox got in return from family friends. Conspiracy calls about John Henry making a salary dump to reinvest in Liverpool, that this is a Fenway Sports Group move first. Or could it just be that the Sox were sick and tired of dealing with somebody that was non-compliant, didn't have a team-first approach, and was souring the lot in a season where they were starting to just turn things around? The timing is suspicious and curious, especially considering the Red Sox just swept the Yankees, the first team to sweep the Yankees all season long, and on a win streak, getting back to over 500 for the first time in quite a while. Joining us now on the hotline to discuss how and why this could have happened, when it all began, and so much more, someone who has done an awesome job covering the Red Sox and the Rafael Devers drama for Mass Live all season long. You can follow him on the socials at Chris Cotillo. Funny enough, it's actually Chris Cotillo joining me, Dan Ball, and Mego on the hotline. Chris, how are you, buddy? Thanks for making some time.
Happy to. How are you?
Doing well, my man. I think we're all just sort of getting our bearings and recalibrating after having our Sunday night supper, our Father's Days, and whatever else just completely dashed against the wall when we all get that first text from a random friend like Devers to the Giants. Like, you got to be kidding me. It was a shock, but let me ask somebody like yourself who's had his finger on the pulse of this for quite some time, regardless of what time of day it happened, were you at all surprised to hear this happen on a Sunday night following the Yankee sweep?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you work in baseball and, you know, if you work in sports, you know, when these things happen in different sports, and middle of June is not a common time for blockbuster trades. It's not the middle of July. It's not the middle of December. And, you know, the Red Sox were riding high, obviously, after the weekend they had. So it was shocking. You know, I think the timing of it made it even more. You know, I think the best way to put it is on Sunday, June 15th, I was shocked about it. But if you look back over the course of, you know, the last 4 months, 5 months, and you think about everything that's gone on, it becomes less shocking pretty quickly. And I think that's kind of the thesis I've come to thinking about the last 20 hours or so.
Chris, thanks for joining us. When you look back now on that May 9th meeting in Kansas City, where John Henry flies out and meets with Rafael Devers one-on-one, and we hear afterwards that it was a very candid conversation. Have you heard anything more about what the resistance was there, what the communication was, how those two parties left that meeting, and was that kind of the first domino to fall in what we see now as the deal that came out yesterday?
Yeah, I don't think it was the first domino. I think it was one of the last dominoes, honestly. I think when you have the owner fly halfway across the country, that's not a common occurrence. You know, when those guys showed up that day, we were all like, oh, they're here. This, you know, they mean business. And I think it was a last ditch effort to try to get Devers to play first. The communication, I think publicly on it, was super weird because John Henry and Rafael Devers are the principals in the meeting, and neither of them have talked about it, which, you know, that's normal for John Henry and became normal for Devers the last couple weeks. And there, you know, Craig Breslow was left to describe a meeting that he was not part of, which that was weird, too. You know, we don't know what was said behind closed doors, but I think the only assumption at this point was, hey, let's be respectful. Let's be candid. We need you to play first base. And Rafi said no. If he had said yes, he probably would have started taking grounders, you know. If he had said yes, he'd probably still be on the team. And so I think, you know, when they say candid, they meant it, because they said, Rafi, you know, I'm the owner. I flew all the way here. I'm paying you all this money. So are you going to do it now? I mean, the only answer is that he just still resisted. And then they got to a point where, you know, the words we've heard the last 2 days at Mass Live reporting on this, unsalvageable and untenable. And that's just where it became. And, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, Rafi and Craig Breslow are getting into fist fights in the home clubhouse at Fenway. But, you know, they wanted to move on because they thought it was the best thing for the team at this time. It's a bold move. It's a crazy move. But things get so bad so fast that, you know, they felt like, you know, with the package that was presented and all the money coming off, they felt like it's something they had to do. And so they did.
Can I ask then, since you said this was unsalvageable, basically going back to that meeting that was over 5 weeks ago, crawling into Sam Kennedy's head, like, what do you think he was trying to present when he was on Nesson last week and he's saying how great it is to see Rafael Devers taking grounders before games and that he's going to basically be there whenever they need him?
Yeah, that was bizarre. And it doesn't seem like there's really a rhyme or reason behind it. I think, you know, maybe he meant down the line in many years. I think the whole taking grounders before games thing was as blown out of proportion as anything I've seen in my time on the beat. I mean, he, you know, went out and was fielding ground balls in the shortstop hole and turning double plays and doing flips. And you know what else? Carlos Narvaez does that at second. And you know what else? Greg Weissert, who's now the setup man, does that at first base. So it's just kind of like, hey, let's hang out. You know, let's be goofy out there and not a getting ready to play in a competitive game. So those comments from Sam, I think the way they were framed, too, were kind of weird. Like, he's not taking grounders every day. He's definitely not doing it seriously. So, you know, we had heard a couple weeks ago, someone put it point blank, he's not playing defense for us this year. And, you know, I thought that meant he'd be the DH. It means that he's on another team.
Chris Cotillo from Mass Live joining WEEI Afternoons, talking the Rafael Devers deal to San Francisco. So, but was it Buster Posey had said that they had been in touch for weeks, actually, that this wasn't just a call in the middle of the night, like I had alluded to earlier on the show, saying like Belichick called and just said, hey, you want Garoppolo for a second? So the groundwork was seemingly being laid for a while. Do we feel like that it was really, Chris, like you had intimated, the attitude of Devers? And had there been any reports of other people of the locker room being an uncomfortable place, or had you noticed any behavior that was rubbing off the wrong way, let's say, on Meyer, Anthony, Campbell, because there is such a balance of a youth core in the clubhouse that you would potentially not want to have somebody like that cause a scene in front of them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a, like, you know, an active disdain or, you know, that he's actively being difficult in the clubhouse on a day-to-day basis. Keeping to himself, hitting the ball 115 miles an hour, and just being a guy who loves to hit, was doing his job, was doing it extremely well. And from the beginning, you know, when you talk to teammates, there are some guys, and a lot of former players have come out and said this, from Kevin Millar to Ortiz, that said at the end of the day, you do what's, you know, best for the team. If they ask you to move, you move. And I think there are players on the Red Sox roster who were of that mind the whole time. I also talked to players on the Red Sox who were saying the entire time that, you know, the team really didn't do it right by Rafi on this one. So I actually think they could have handled it better, and I don't blame him. At the end of the day, we're all in control of our own careers. From the beginning, it was one of those ink blot tests where, you know, people looked at it both ways. I'm somewhere in the middle. I see the nuance on both. I see the whole picture. But no matter where you come from, no matter how you look at it, it's a huge distraction, you know, and it was from the first day of spring training or the second day of spring training. And it was, for what it's worth, like a vibes killer. Everybody's excited about Bregman. And then Rafi says, no, I don't want to be the DH. No, I'm not doing it. And that becomes the story of spring training, not Bregman or Crochet's extension or Campbell making the team. It's this lingering Rafi stuff. And for it to resurface in May, I mean, it really did take its toll, I think, from a distraction, drama, something's off type of vibe. You know, I'm not going to get into, you know, the exacts of, you know, what happened or some of the conversations between reporters and players who were upset about the coverage. But what I can tell you is in the month of May, this was a group that was very, very, very keen on knowing every piece of outside noise about them. And that was a little unusual. They had their backs up. It was the way it was. And It was unlike anything I've seen in my time on the beat. And one player put it to me like this, like, hey, you know, things are just tight around here right now. Don't take it personally. And I thought that was telling back then. I think it's telling now that, you know, maybe people didn't dislike Rafi the guy. Maybe they sided with him. Maybe they didn't. I think the big thing is that, you know, there was a distraction. And for a team that's, you know, trying to accomplish the same goal and win games, it was one that, you know, definitely played a factor here in the first half.
Chris, do you have a sense where Cora lands in any of this? Was he part of the decision-making? Was he part of any of these conversations and what his mindset, how he's feeling about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's in a different place, I think, than Breslow, has a much longer relationship. You know, I think it's one of those things where the Red Sox, from what we've heard, had a pretty detailed action plan on how they were going to present the first base thing to Devers. I think Cora and Breslow asked him to be the DH. And when that went sideways, you know, Cora had to massage and be like, all right, no, you're my guy. It's all right. No hard feelings. We'll move on. And when they had to present the first base thing, you know, the way the Red Sox wanted to do it is we'll have Breslow do it, be the bad cop. Cora will be the good cop. And if it goes sideways, we'll still have Cora. So we don't completely lose Rafi in the process. Of course, they went even more sideways than you could imagine. And, you know, I think Cora probably sees both sides, as a lot of people do. Is he banging his head against the wall saying, I can't believe you traded this guy? I don't think so today. I think he understands, you know, all the factors at play. He looks at the game from a front office perspective because he would like to do that down the line. Obviously, his lineup's going to be worse tonight in Seattle than it was yesterday at Fenway. And he'll have to figure that out. But, you know, the idea of this massive, massive friction between Cora and every GM he's ever worked with, you know, sometimes it's been legit, definitely at times with Heim Bloom. And I'm sure there's been disagreements with Breslow too along the way. But, you know, it's tough to tell because he has, you know, never kind of indicated that he was all in on moving Devers to first. But he also might have been, you know, protecting kind of the brand in the clubhouse by just saying, like, he's my DH and playing good cop, like I said.
Yeah, and you got to wonder exactly what this will do for the credibility of management with their own players, future free agents, and more, because of promises made, thrifty moves done, deals in the middle of the night.
I mean,
it's just, it's a mess.
Not to interrupt you, but, like, I see that please. A lot. At the end of the day, if you bid $15 million more than the other team bidding for someone, they don't care what happened at Devers 3 or 4 years ago. You know, like, that's kind of just money talks at the end of the day. I don't think it hurts. People are saying on Twitter, like, well, now they're never going to be able to extend Anthony or Meyer. Well, if they offer Roman Anthony $200 million tomorrow, I'm sure they'd be able to extend him. So that stuff, I think, you know, it's really case by case. You know, it really comes down to just what a player wants, what his market is at the exact time. I wouldn't say that, you know, there's really kind of that. They're not going to get a reputation based on this one.
Yeah, more specific than an overall umbrella approach for sure. Chris, thanks so much for making some time for us again. You've been doing a great job covering the Devers drama as well as all things Red Sox on the beat for Mass Live this year. You can give him a follow at Chris Cotillo on the socials, and of course, read all of his musings, analysis, and perspective at masslive.com. Thanks again, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And like he said on socials, Mego, when Megan Ottolini calls, you pick up the phone and you do the interview. So thanks very much.
Only because I hide my number.
That was great. There's a lot to react to and unpack there. So more of your calls when we get back. See, the lines are loaded up at 617-779-7937. We'll also react to some of the things that Chris had to say, and some new news. If you think the Red Sox are having a bad enough day right now, Mego, well, put it this way. Bad news never really goes on strike, especially around Fenway Park. We'll get to all that when we come back here on EEI Afternoons.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
you know, the idea of this massive, massive friction between Cora and every GM he's ever worked with, you know, sometimes it's been legit, definitely at times with Heim Bloom. And I'm sure there's been disagreements with Breslow too along the way, but, you know, it's tough to tell because he has, you know, never kind of indicated that he was all in on moving Devers to first, but he also might have been, you know, protecting kind of the brand in the clubhouse by just saying, like, he's my DH and playing good cop, like I said.
That from Chris Cotillo from Mass Live, who just joined me and Megan Ottolini here on WEEI Afternoons. If you missed the interview, of course, you can subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast or use the Odyssey app. Download it today, AUDACY, rewind and listen at your leisure. Mego, do you join me in believing, now that we heard some of that from Chris, that on May 9th, when John Henry flew out to Kansas City, that meeting was less of, all right, enough is enough. Get your ass out there, take some ground balls and do what we say because, you know, shut up and dribble. We're paying you to play. Or was that, I'm kind of getting the feeling like that's when they decided like, okay, yeah, this is, we're going to start to get you out of here. Like, this obviously isn't working for all parties and it would be in our best interest to uncouple as quickly as possible.
Sounds like they pulled out the big gun. And they said, if he's going to resist John Henry, where can we go from here? Where can we go from here? Like, if he's not going to be flexible with any of this when the big boss comes in, what can you do? Like, that kind of determined his future is what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Could you imagine being paid? Forget. I mean, we always do whatever the boss has asked us to do around our place. That's just part of being, you know, team workers, company players, what have you. But the stakes are just, no offense to Ken Laird, Mike Thomas and company, the stakes are just a little lower in being the flagship station to carry the Red Sox as opposed to the Boston Red Sox. We're not, I don't know what, if we have favored nations deals or what Greg Hill makes. I don't think anyone around here makes $31 million a year.
Yeah, I'm generally kind of allergic to comparing anything to what professional athletes do.
Sure.
So I'm going to sit that one out.
Understandably so. But just being asked to try to do something that's in the best interest of the ball club, and having no interest in doing it whatsoever. Like, I fear that there's going to be a villain. Like, there seems to be a largely sympathetic drive towards just Red Sox fandom right now. Like, oh, man, just when we have one good player, they deal him away again and they don't get much in return. But I feel like there may be a villainizing backlash coming towards Devers at some point. Or do you think that we're actually post that?
I think there's always going to be a group of fans who feel that way because they're going to be loyal to the laundry, and that's totally fine. Like, that's an approach a lot of people have. That's their loyalty. I think what's most frustrating here, from my opinion, is that it looks so much like a salary dump. If you want to look at the silver lining of the trade because of the return, because of what you just did, not just over the weekend sweeping the Yankees, but going Yankees, Rays, Yankees, and winning those three series, and what momentum you had, it looks like they were just eager to shed that 8 years of his salary and move on from that. And that just doesn't feel like a winning mentality. I think that's where most of the frustration comes from.
Yeah, I still would have loved to have seen them try to find a way to work it out over the course of the year. And if Devers put up career numbers, then his value would have been, I think, Mego, at the end of the season, just as high. It does feel a little knee-jerk, to say the least. Let's squeak in one quick call before we get to the top of the hour, prepare our 3-point stances, but everyone, we're going to weave in as many calls as we can throughout the entirety of the show. So don't you go anywhere. Give me Dylan in Plymouth on line 4, please. Dylan, how are you?
Hi, very good, guys. Before I get to my point, I just wanted to quickly mention one of your previous callers was from Linfield, Matt. That's my hometown. So, don't know if I know him, but hi there. And I just wanted to say fun fact about Linfield. One of the girls in my high school, my grade, she was the nephew of John Henry, and another kid in my grade, family owns KM Hot Dog. So that should tell you everything you need to know about Linfield.
All right. Well, we'll buy all that next time we're up at Marketplace. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. You know, my father is not here, thankfully, so I'll try to keep this, PG, but I would say that my main issue here is really, not so much with, Devers, it's a shame he's traded, but kind of with you guys. And it's more of just generally how you handle situations like this. I think you guys are a little bit too negative. And I've felt this way my entire life. We're a pretty privileged sports base here. And I feel like we should be happy that we got something for him. It looked like he didn't want to be here. Odds are there was going to be some holdout at some point. We dumped his ridiculous salary. And I just in general feel like it's always like, oh, man, it sucks so much to be here. This new thing sucks. This thing sucks. We're probably the most privileged sports city in the world. And I just wish you guys would be a little more positive.
Wow. So it's us, not him. It's you and me, not we. Wow.
I mean, I'm
Mango,
not.
I was just going to say to you, honestly, I'm so glad that, who was that again? From Dylan from Plymouth via Linfield. I'm so glad he said that, because I was just going to say to you, Mego, if you could just stop being so negative all the time.
I'm sorry. You traded away a star that you gave $313 million to just 2 years ago.
I'm like, not in my appreciation lap.
This is not a guy on an expiring contract who you're moving because you're afraid he's going to walk and you're getting nothing back. Like, I'm glad that you're happy with the return and the financial flexibility that this allows you. And maybe you want to take a more leveled approach. As I look at it today, the team is worse. So take that with what you will. Sorry it's negative. I don't love Devers as the player, but the team is worse off today. I don't know how you don't look at the situation and say that.
Yeah, I'm glad they got out from underneath a contract that was of their own doing, by the way. If we're frustrated or a little bit negative, you'll have to understand that we're also castigating the Red Sox organization for making that foolish move in the first place in response to John Henry getting booed at the Fenway Winter Weekend
plus side, the Wizards are looking to move Marcus Smart. So if you want to bring him home, that would get me to do backflips on the radio.
There's the positivity. We
there
found
we
it.
Go.
Just saying.
There we go.
I'm just saying, bring him home.
Okay, so if you get Marcus Smart back, so you just want a reunion tour to get back in your Celtics feels, considering Brown just had surgery and Tatum's going to miss most of the year?
The tandem of Marcus Smart and Peyton Pritchard together in the upcoming season would heal me by 30%.
You would be bursting with joyous green. 617-779-7937. You can jump in on Dylan's line, whether you're from Plymouth or Linfield or both, and blame us for everything going on with the Raphael Devers
drama.
Problem is not
the Red Sox. Problem is us.
I know. Don't forget, when you have a few minutes, the three-point stance, where we will have three unique takes on why Raphael Devers is gone. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, or are we just the problem? That's coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.